Welcome, everybody. It's time once again for the next chapter with Charlie Hedges. As he explores turning the page on his life and yours. Hey, Charlie.
Hey, Producer Paul. How's it with you today?
I'm doing good. But I'm afraid to ask what the topic is today.
Well, you're going to find. I just got it. You know, I'm a little slow today. Just so our listeners know, I had cataract surgery, so I have one eye that's perfect and another eye that is totally out of whack, and so I am not seeing, which is causing me some disconsternation. But Terry's going to pick us up and save us today. And in saying that, today we're privileged to have our regular insightful guest, Terry Hershey, prolific author, renowned public speaker, landscape architect, and a mentor to several people. I put it, Terry, on the art of slowing down to take in the pleasure of life. Is that sort of...
That's good.
That sort of describes it. Today's topic... it's going to be a fun one for me. I've been wanting to do it for some time, and it affects every single listener and is perhaps the systematic root of most of our personal limitations. I want to talk about our daily experience of fear and how it impacts the choices we make. In addition to bringing on severe anxiety, fear is also the source of low self-esteem, anger, resistance to new ideas, reluctance to experiment, and a general acceptance of the status quo. I believe, I'm coming to believe that fear is one of the most influential psychological determinants in how we feel and believe. What do you think about that?
I actually wholeheartedly agree.
No kidding. Okay, well, that's off to a good start. So what's up with you before we get going?
Life is good. I had a garden club come by and visit my garden today, so that was just enjoyable. And then I took a nap, which is better than enjoyable. You know what? Speaking of fear, let me start here. This is true. I have found that if you don't make space in your life for just healthy choices, you have only space in your life for what is going to be detrimental and or not just always toxic, but stuff that eats at you. So if you don't take care of yourself, it's no wonder that the things that are invasive take over.
That makes perfect sense. Elaborate on that. When you say you make space for things that are...
Well, think about somebody with just some... Just talk about a simple anxiety. I say simple, but just a basic anxiety thing. And, you know, I'm undone. Wait a minute. I'm nervous. I'm undone. Okay. And you just start with simple things. Have you had any water lately? Have you had a meal lately? In other words, there are simple things, and we wonder, and we see what happens when people have been deprived. When you're deprived of things to just make you healthy, sunlight and food and sleep and
don't dare say fitness.
No, I was going to say solitude.
Oh, okay, good, good.
Yeah, but if you're deprived of those things, there is a part of your spirit, part of your psyche, that soaks up whatever else is more invasive, and that is anxiety. It takes that space.
Yeah, fear is certainly the root to anxiety.
Yes, this is important. The way you are made up emotionally, physiologically, in your emotions is that. You don't have, there's not just like empty space. Okay, I'm going to get rid of this. I don't like this in my spirit. I don't like this negative thought. I'll just get rid of that negative thought. It's the same with fear. I'll just get rid of that fear. No. What you understand is like, it's that space in the garage of your mind. But when that doesn't stay an empty space. You have to fill that space with something else.
Yes, exactly. I so totally agree that when you want to get rid of something negative in your life, you have to replace it with something good. There's a, for those of us that are Bible people, there's one, remember the one where Jesus got rid of a demon and nothing else took his place, and seven more came in and took the place.
Perfect illustration. Yeah. Which is why in the way we do self-help sometimes in this culture, it's like just mentally, zone in, just get rid of your fear. No. We miss the opportunity to give people the opportunity to choose a different story. It's not about getting rid of one story. It's about choosing a different story, a better story.
Can you give me some examples of that? Do you have anything in mind of what a better story might be?
Yeah, in Sabbath Moment, the one I just wrote on Monday.
I didn't read that one.
Anyway, it was the battle. It's an old story, and I don't know when it took place, 1,000 years ago or more. The battle for Jerusalem, and Eglon was—he had ordinary men who were the fighters. He didn't have the trained soldiers. He just had some ordinary men, and he said, you are now my group to save Jerusalem, and so what he did. The first thing he did was he knighted them. Because all of them said, but we're not them. In other words, they were afraid. They were afraid they weren't enough. They were afraid they couldn't do the job. They were afraid, whatever it was. Fear was in the wheelhouse. So he knighted them.
So a sword on the shoulder gave them the courage.
Well, but it goes beyond that, because it's not just that touch, but exactly. But the king said, what are you nutting? And so the king is thinking, you can't just knight everybody. That's just nuts. That's going to make them better fighters. And he said yes, because it's not just knighting. It's letting them embrace something inside of them, their story, that they are a knight inside, and it gives them the permission to choose that story.
I like that a lot. I think that has a lot to do with what we do every day. Is it permission to grant ourselves permission to adopt our own story rather than the story that we fear others are making up about us.
100, yeah. One of my favorite lines is to say, we get to say how the story ends, or for the next chapter, for example.
Right.
We get to say. Because when people come to me with, to tell me their stuff, right? And they want me to fix their stuff. And I ask them how they want the story to go, and they're thinking, what do you mean? What? And what's curious is people don't believe, generally, we don't believe that we have the power to say what the next step of the story is. We don't trust that power in us.
And how often in that process do we talk about fear?
Oh, I think, from my experiences, we talk about it all the time.
Oh, do you? Yeah,
talk about, well, inadvertently, we talk about the impact of it, the ramifications of it.
Yes, exactly.
Yeah, we don't look at it head on. To your point, no, we don't say, I want to face my fear. We don't say that.
Yeah, or to recognize how my fears are impacting me.
Right.
Because my fears are impacting me, as I said, that I think I alluded to earlier, that, my opinion is that fear may be the greatest overall source of probably most of our psychological disorders.
Yes. And that's because we're not at home in our own skin. We're not grounded. And when you're not grounded, you give way to whatever is louder and most bombarding. So you're afraid.
So how do you do that without going to a shrink? How do you embrace being comfortable in your own skin without spending an hour or two a week with a shrink? What sorts of tactics do you do to embrace that?
I was thinking of, remember the movie? It was Crimes of the Heart. Do you remember that movie?
I remember the name, but I don't remember the movie.
Yeah, it was about three sisters and...
Oh, the one where she stuck her head in an oven?
Yeah,
Sissy Spacek stuck her head in an oven?
Yeah,
I remember that part.
because Sissy Spacek, and she has anxiety. And, you know, the older sisters are always trying to mess with her anxiety. And one day she said, why do you, because then Sissy opens the, when she's having a moment, she just turns the oven on, opens the oven, sticks her head in there. And so once she says, why do you do it, babe? Why do you put your head in the oven? And babe says, I don't know. I guess I'm having a bad day. and her sister says, just what you just said. Well, we've got to find a way to get you through these bad days.
Yeah, without the oven.
Yeah, yeah. Let's do it without the oven.
Yeah, let's give that a shot. You know, now you know what's interesting about fear, Terry. Before we go further into the problems of fear, is that you know, from early mankind, from prehistoric man, fear has been a good thing. It has been a self-protective. We have lasted as long as we have lasted because of fear, because of the endorphins or whatever come up inside of us.
But think about that, Charlie. That's precisely it. We are wired as a species to see fear as primarily an alarm system.
Exactly.
That invites us to make a choice. And we have somehow given ourselves the fact that the alarm system is automatically complete reality about the only choice we have. We have lost the fact that the alarm gives us the choice.
That's an insight I've never heard of. I've never even thought about that. But fear does not bring up the necessity that we have to fight or flight. Either one is that it gives us the opportunity to make a choice.
Yeah, it didn't. I mean, when in, you know, prehistoric era, you know, our ancestors, the fight or flight thing, which we know about fear, it's that when that kicked in, when that alarm kicked in, if they started with the sentence, oh, I'm screwed, there's no fight or flight. There's just getting eaten.
That's not a good option. Yeah.
No. So that's why fight or flight. Then. But the point is, the power still rested with them. This is what's interesting with people, and you do on small anxiety life. Now, I'm not downplaying the reality of how unpleasant anxiety and fear can be. I mean, I know that personally. I get that. But that doesn't mean that I just still don't have the power, the capacity to respond to that. I'm not always good at it.
You know, I wanted to ask you, you know, I've often heard it said that public speaking is one of the greatest fears we have in the United States, and yet you do it for a living. Do you feel fear and anxiety before you do a speaking gig?
No. Well,
okay, that's going to be helpful to sort of dissect that, because you have developed a self-confidence and a self-belief that you will succeed in doing this and that it's not going to make a bad impression on you.
Yeah. I mean, depending on the audience, you know, you can look out at the audience and think, you know, I hope this goes well. There's no doubt about that. But when you step on the stage, I'm at home. I mean, I belong there.
It's
and
funny.
Now it's my story.
When I used to do, you know, the time when we were working together and I was doing public speaking with your group, and I did quite a bit of public speaking, I had acute anxiety disorder and didn't know it. I knew that fear was something that everybody experienced with public speaking. So I thought staying up all night throwing up was normal. I thought that was the fear of speaking. And yet, when I went on, it took 2 seconds until I was on and I was alive. I was, you know, I loved every second of it. You know, and the larger the audience, the better. And those of you who do public speaking know that the larger the audience, the the better, easier it is to speak than to a smaller audience. I would end, however, Terry, at the end, I would just want to get on an airplane and drink a bottle of wine because it came back on again afterward. Does that make sense?
You mean the anxiety came back?
The anxiety came back, yeah.
Yeah.
Came back and haunted me.
And I would say, and, you know, we're not here to talk specifically about you, but I would say that that anxiety is not necessarily linked to the speaking. That was linked to other parts of your life and world. And you have found ways to help address that somewhat, too, by, you know, I mean, the fact that...
By stopping speaking.
Yeah, well, no, by stopping drinking.
Yeah.
I mean, but the speaking, that's just a, yeah, of course, you stop speaking. But the fact is, the anxiety is not necessarily completely linked to the speaking.
No. Now, I heard somebody on a podcast within the last couple of months say the opposite of love is not hate, but fear. And as I think about that, I have a feeling that there is something to that. For what we hate, except, can't read my writing here, is preventing you from getting what you want. We hate someone preventing us from getting what we want or somehow impacting our self-regard. What do you think about the opposite of love being hate or being fear, not hate?
I actually agree with that. Actually, the truth is, I believe the opposite of love is apathy, but not hate. The opposite of love is simply is a disconnect, complete disconnect. It's not about hating someone.
I agree.
However, fear. I mean, I get where it's going with that. And here's my take on it. Here's what fear does, because I talked about the fact fear doesn't let you tell your story. In other words, it takes your story away. It assumes that there's only one story. Well, there's a problem with that. That means fear alters reality completely. If fear says there's only one story, then fear... Now, I mean, for example, let's say you are in a place outside where there is a mudslide coming down and it's coming at you, okay? Fear kicks in. And you're saying, obviously the mud is real. It could hurt you. It could kill you. Or water or whatever. And the answer is yes, of course. But if you give in to the fear, then there's only one story. You are gone. You are swept away. And in the end, you might be. But the point is, if you give in to the fear, you have no choices. Zero choices. And so what fear does, it labels reality, which is exactly what happens in relationships. If I fear you and or the story, I label you, I restrict you. That's what's happening in our country right now. I don't need to know you, I just label you. Because fear takes the story and only makes it one. It doesn't give you choices, doesn't let you explore, doesn't give you options.
No dialogue, yeah.
Yeah, no dialogue, no learning, no willing to be surprised, no, no chance for any of those endorphins to kick in.
Yeah. And we have, and in the United States, now I don't know about other countries, you know, I've been around, but I don't know about the media influence, but in the United States, fear so impacts our self-image, and ego has a lot to do with fear and the decimation of the ego, and that, you know, our beauty, our fitness, our success, all of these are in jeopardy whenever we put ourselves in front of other people or whenever we take the chance of failing, and then that fear of failure, you know, somehow makes me less than. And
so, yeah, I think what we have done, we've exacerbated it. We've taken an American way of quote, solving problems, which means we were very cerebral and cognitive about it. So we say, what do we need to do with fear? Well, we need to do this. So, you know, instead of being afraid about the way you look, then buy this outfit, do this, and then you'll look this way. In other words, what we have done is we've actually added another anxiety to fear. We've added perfectionism.
Exactly.
And so now we've actually doubled down on this whole thing. And we wonder why we have a drug crisis. It's like my first thing with people who are afraid is, okay, don't be afraid of it or ashamed of it. Don't be afraid of the fear you have. I mean, so, okay. In other words, the problem is in this country, you're afraid to admit it because there's something wrong with you, just like you said. In other words, oh my God, I'm not only afraid, now I'm weak. Shit.
And, you know, and the longer we have to think about it, the worse it is. You know, if we have a public speaking gig and it's in 3 months, we live in denial for 2 months or 2.5 months, and then we live in 2 weeks of hell trying to figure out what we're going to do in that speech.
Yeah, people say, you know, I'm going to be scared to death of her. And my deal is, okay. I mean, that's not the end of the world.
And what way, now, let's look at it the other way. How can fear be an advantage for us?
Well, because it's that alarm. It's the alarm that says you have a choice. You, guess what? Guess what? You have a choice to make. You. Which means you have the capacity for the choice. You.
And you must adapt that.
And guess what?
Adopt that.
Yeah, and guess what? And guess what? You may not make a good one right away. That's okay.
But you made
one. You get to make another one. You made one.
You know what's really strange about me, Terry, and I wonder how many people are affected like this. I am, if I am put in an immediate crisis, not a, you know, one that has to be handled today or within the next week because something really critical is going on, I have no fear whatsoever. I am at my best in crisis. But if you give me time to think about it, if you give me time to ponder it, then fear will overwhelm me and will take over. But in crisis, I typically make really good decisions, fast decisions. I'm able to take over. I don't run. You know, I just jump right in the middle of the fray. But it's only if I don't have to think, you know, I don't have to think about it. I just have to think about resolving the situation.
Yeah, and that's good. And, you know, and because what that says to me is that's a place where you feel most Charlie. In other words, you're most grounded. And when you're grounded there, there's not even a second thought about the fact that you get to say how the story ends or how it goes forward, what the next chapter is.
Yeah, that's great. Look, I want to take a break, and then I want to come back, and I want to talk about an offshoot of fear, which I think is really common today, and that's anger, and how fear really incites anger. So let's take a quick break and come back. Hi, you're listening to The Next Chapter with Charlie. This is Charlie Hedges, and I'm with my special guest, Terry Hershey, and we are talking about fear, anxiety, and ego, but primarily fear, and we've talked a lot about fear, and I like what Terry, I like the things that you've had to say. You've had some really, really fascinating things to say, and that fear, we have a choice of fear, and that we don't have to take that fear route. We can make a choice of taking another...
Well, yeah, I mean, fear itself can be neutral. Now, granted, I could be threatened at gunpoint, and the fear doesn't feel neutral there. But obviously, I have the capacity now to... I mean, even if you go the furthest Elie Wiesel said, you know, you can take everything away from me except for my capacity to choose. You can't take that away.
Yeah, that's what Frankl said too.
Oh, Viktor Frankl, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah. I want to talk about another issue, and that I deal with, you know, in my 12-step program, I deal with sponsoring individuals, and there's a lot of men that I talk to that are just filled with, when they take their drug of choice, whether it be a drug or whether it be alcohol, it always exacerbates their anger, because what I think it does is it removes the shield that they have, and it always boils down to fear of some kind. Their anger, typically they're afraid that they're not going to get what they want, or afraid that they're being assaulted, their self-esteem is assaulted, and they act radically in protection of that. That the protection of fear can cause us to go right back to the caveman days and wanting to kill the brontosaurus.
Yeah, I told a story in a Sabbath moment about the American guy, you know, the successful American businessman who went to the Zen teacher, you know, because he wanted, inner peace.
Okay.
He wanted inner peace.
Okay.
And of course, the Zen teacher says, okay, but first let's have a cup of tea. And the guy's going, I don't want a cup of tea, I just want inner peace. And so he says, okay, so the Zen teacher's pouring a cup of tea. And he keeps pouring, and now the cup is full, and it's spilling over the top of the cup. So the American businessman goes, hey, dude, you know what? This is nuts. Watch what you're doing. You're spilling the tea on everything. And the Zen teacher said, well, see, your life is just like that teacup. You said you want inner peace, but your life is already full. Until you make space for the inner peace, nothing will happen.
How do we make space?
The anger, the anger you're talking about is what's filled the space.
Does it mean stepping back and thinking? Does it mean...
No, I'm saying, what have you done this week, this month, this year, that has nourished and nurtured that non-angry part of you? Tell me. What have you done? So, for example, and I can give you answers this year for me. What have you done?
Yeah, you've had a great year.
I'm just saying to those guys, okay, good, I'm glad. And you're pissed off, and I see that you're pissed off. But tell me what you've done. I've gone to meetings. Okay, what else? Mm. Tell me what happened in the meetings that filled that space in a different way. What else?
Right.
In other words, tell me what. That we're going way back to the beginning of our conversation, Charlie. Did you sleep? Did you eat?
So it is the replacing that fear with something healthy and some good self-regard. Healthy self-regard.
I would look him in the face and say, have you ever been non-angry? Yes. Tell me when. Tell me what happened. Tell me when you were non-angry. What was going on in your life? What happened? What did you do? What choices did you make? In other words, because we're so full of it, it's the only choice we have.
How is that?
Anger.
Go ahead.
Well, we let anger and fear do the same thing. We let it decide the choice. I know that when I have traveled too much, I'm short-circuited. I will bark at people I don't normally bark at. I will. I'll say things I don't normally say. I'll give in to silly thinking that I don't normally give into.
How do you think, let me go into a subject that's going to make producer Paul smile, although I'm not letting him on the microphone. How do you think fear is impacting the discourse between the right and the left in the United States?
How do I think it is? Or do I think it is?
How do you think it is? Because I think it's pretty obvious, but maybe I'm wrong.
When you're not comfortable in your own skin, when you're insecure about who you are and your capacity to speak truth from the same place, you need to capsize reality, and fear does that.
And so how is that affecting our politicians? What are they afraid of? Losing power, losing influence? Do you think they're actually afraid that something bad is going to happen to the country?
No, I don't. I think that when I feel like I've got to give up some ground somewhere.
Yes.
And I feel like my identity is predicated on keeping that little piece of ground, because I don't believe that Terry has capacity in and of himself, so I've got to keep that little piece of ground. Then anything that threatens that piece of ground, I consider now an enemy.
Right. Right, because I have become somewhat less than...
I am, yeah, because I'm operating from that less than place. I'm operating from a place where I don't need that ground to be Terry. You know why? Because I'm actually whole as I am. I don't need that title to be Terry. I don't need that seat in office to be Terry.
You know, how long have you felt this way, Terry? Because this is not, I've known you for several decades, and I'm not knocking the way you used to be, but you were not always like this. There were always drivers that were sort of self-motivated, that are not so self-motivated today, that are more what we call second half living.
Yes, and I think that's fair. Now, I watched a documentary the other night about it's called Echo in the Canyon.
I saw it. Loved it.
Brilliant. Brilliant.
Brilliant. Took me right back, man, because those are my days.
Those are all your people, and it's the music scene. You know, it was the Beach Boys and the Mamas and the Papas and the Birds and Buffalo Springfield and...
And the Beatles were in it as well.
And of course the Beatles, and they interviewed, and they all knew each other, and it was all really a community. And they interviewed David Crosby, because he left the Birds, and of course, you know, they have to say, why did he leave? What did he leave? And what's his name? Who was head of the Birds? We're talking about why he left, and he was saying it very diplomatically. And David Crosby was interviewed in the thing.
He was in quite a bit. Yeah, Tom Petty.
He said, no, that's not why I left the Birds. I left the Birds because I was an asshole. So to answer your question, that's what happens when fear controls your life. You become an asshole.
Let's try to... So everybody's on the same page, and we don't just keep using this word. Let's define fear again a little bit, just to remind people of fear, and that it is one thing. It is not getting my way. There is really a fear of not getting my way. My wife right now is in a non-clutter mood. I said our house was cluttered, and so she's in a non-clutter mood, but she has gone to the radical extreme, and I have a fear of my physical surroundings changing, chairs in different places, and you know, that is difficult for me, and that is actually a fear of loss of being comfortable in my own space, because my own space was the way I wanted it, and so fear is so wide ranging. I have elected not to cause me anger, but to say, it's your house, you know, the woman, you want the house this way, fine with me, I'll learn to live with it.
So just so you know, that last sentence, the woman you want the house this way, that's a show that I have no authority on.
It's, you know, and it's too bad we can't tell the story, because the story,
that whole relationship story stuff. But here, just to think about fear, though, here's the big thing. I mean, even just a simple thing like moving a chair, but I get that. I mean, I know my space, my ritual. I get that. But, okay, put it in the fear category. But the point is, you have the capacity to name it. You have the capacity to look at it, which means you have the capacity to choose. In other words, you see it as an alarm. In other words, it doesn't take over your life. That's a different deal. How you make that choice is predicated on whether you're in a good place, the same place. That goes back to, are you taking care of who you are? Because if you're not in a good place, in the same place, it only ends up with you fighting with your wife.
Do you think it requires ritual?
100%.
And how many of us actually have a ritual? You know, I'm a serial ritualizer, in that I will go through rituals for 2 or 3 years, but then it no longer satisfies me, so I find another ritual.
Nothing wrong with that.
That's okay. That's allowed.
Well, not only is it allowed, it's actually essential.
You know what's interesting? I think this has to do with something we're talking about, but when I was in my 30s, I was a minister at a large church, you know, a large, what they used to call them, not user-friendly, but open to anybody that wanted to come to church. Right. And there would be music and entertainment and all sorts of things. And the subject matters would not be deep, heavy sin, you're going to hell subject matters, but talking about marriage and life and the things we're talking about now, self-esteem. And it was quite popular, and the church grew to, I believe it was around, we discussed, it was 12 to 15,000 people when I was there. And I grew, as a creative person, I grew weary of that, because every service was creative. You know, we had a play, we had some kind of music, we had some kind of entertainment, and it felt like the Ellen DeGeneres show. And that actually created more chaos in me, and that's why I fell off into the Anglican Episcopalian, where it's Catholic light, and we do the same thing every Sunday. Every Sunday, it's the same ritual that's done over and over and over. And I've done that for over 25 years now. And it's the same. They haven't changed the ritual. And I find that it is so enriching for me that my roots grow deep in the ritual, and that I am comfortable in that ritual.
Yeah, that's because you're the fence is there, the boundary is there. Once the fence is there, you have the capacity to make that space. And so that fence, that boundary, is actually taking care of yourself. It's providing you yourself, your identity, your core, a place to put those roots down. In other words, you don't have to fret about that stuff. You don't have to fret about non-safety for your emotions. That's the key. That's crucial.
That's interesting. I never thought of the other church being a contradiction to my being able to settle down and relax with my emotions.
Yeah, the thing about being at home in your own skin is a big deal about fear. And because the first thing if someone comes to me with a fear of any kind, the last thing I do is to have them, quote, get rid of it. No, first of all, we have to create a space for you to own your story, because you get to make the choices here. You do. You don't need somebody like me telling you to not think. Don't think about it. Think about something else. Do something. No, you don't need that from me. It's your choice. These are your choices, your stories.
But we may not need it from you, Terry, but we need help. We need, because we are getting so much advice from the other side.
Yeah, and you need Evelyn to look at you and say, you are a knight. Look at me. You're a knight. Now we got to find that knight in you.
And where do we find those types of people, that type of book, that type of understanding, when we are just utterly bombarded with fear-based commercials, fear-based media?
What the pragmatic thing is, turn that off. Literally, turn it off. Or when it happens, when I hear it, I say out loud, literally, no. No. No.
Since when have you been doing this? Is this a new thing, or is this...
Yeah, this is new.
This is new because you just couldn't take the crap anymore?
Well, because, part of it is that you realize, wait a minute, what gets to tell you what your story is? And part of what I do with Writing Sabbath Moment every week is, you know, I get to choose to tell this my story.
That's great. Yeah, I need to do that. I didn't write a blog this last week because, I was doing the wonderful thing of decluttering and cleaning the garage, and that was my writing day. And I did everything I could to avoid it, believe me. You know, we even hired somebody who is a declutterer, you know, understands that sort of thing. And she came over and I let my wife do that while I took all the paint down to the, you know, the place where you can deposit old paint and old computers and all of that. And so I got out of it from that, but that was... That was a tough one for me. But we did, you know, the clean space and the lack of clutter is very helpful. You know what I want to talk about and what I want to sort of end our discussion with? And that's with a couple of Terry Hershey-inspired works. And I want to talk about The Power of Pause. And I want to talk about Sabbath Moment or Sabbath. What's the other great book by Sabbath? About Sabbath?
Sanctuary? Or
Sanctuary,
Garden.
Yeah, Sanctuary. I want to talk about those. What do you offer in those two books and those two? Because you have online series and you have several outlets that people can participate. And this would be, to me, would be a great antidote to falling prey to the social fears that I think are put upon us. I think our social fears are more put upon us than we put upon ourselves, and we buy into the media that is just propagating.
We can't say put upon us in the sense that it's forced upon us, although. It feels like a fire hose. There's no doubt about it.
Well, yeah, but if you hear it two dozen times a day.
But if I don't have the capacity inside of me to say no, eventually it takes root.
Now, see, you just narrowed our audience, because how many people have that capacity?
Every single one of us. And it's blunted. It's numbed. It's buried.
How do we make it alive?
You start small, and tell me a time this week when you felt grounded and you felt like you were at home in your own skin. What took place? Let's start there. Let's do that. Start small. Start small.
What does it mean to feel? You know, I really want to dig into this because we talk about it a lot, but I'm not sure everybody gets it. What is it? What does it mean to feel at home and to feel comfortable in your own skin?
You're not making choices and decisions and reactions that are adverse to what you and your spirit and core believe.
So it's really almost like you're not even making reactions. You're being proactive.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, there's an authenticity to it. I mean, you know, when you have said something, done something, been a certain way, afterwards in your mind you're going, oh, crap. Either that wasn't me, or I shouldn't have done that, or whatever it is, you know, when we go off and we spout and spew. So, no, at home in your own skin is, I don't have to, at home in your own skin means I don't have to live with the, all of the machinations in my mind afterwards. Like, should I or shouldn't I have? At home in my own skin, as I make choices, and you go with, I'm glad. That's
yeah,
good.
Boy, I really believe, as much as I'm not doing it now, I really believe that sometime during the day, you know, for me it was morning and maybe evening, I'm usually too tired to do it, but some sort of ritual that's sort of a meditation, a reading period. My wife spends at least 30 minutes every morning in her room, and with her it's reading books, it's Bible study, it's prayer, it's a time where she centers herself and gets centered with the universe and with God. And I think that gives her a lot of strength throughout the day. She does it every single day. I think perhaps that should be something I should think about, of what I'm going to do every single day again, because I'm living the haphazard retired life.
Well, yeah, I was playing golf the other day, and you know, during the week, and so the guy said to me, "Oh, so that's great. So you're retired."
Yeah, I guess. Do I look retired? Is that it? Because yeah, I sure as hell don't feel it.
Yeah. Yeah, I have inner peace. Do I look retired to you? Huh?
Yeah.
Now leave me alone. I've got to go do a podcast on anger and fear.
Yeah. So tell me about, you know, I kind of got the sanctuary thing, but tell me about the power of pause. What was the line you used on that? It's do less to accomplish more, or something in that vein.
Yeah. Well, that's the same thing with the teacup story. Pausing is like, dude, stop. Empty your teacup. That's what pausing does. Set something down. Great story about a young guy, a young kid. He's doing the Eurail Pass thing, but he's taking the night train because it's free, and that way he doesn't have to run a bed. And he's got all these suitcases, and he gets on. And they say, you know, I hate to tell you this, but there's been a raft of theft lately, and we're not responsible if anything's stolen. So the kid's like, oh, my God, this is all I got. So he's laying in bed looking at his stuff because he's got his stuff there. Somebody's going to steal it. So finally he falls to sleep at about 2. He wakes up at 3, and his stuff is gone. And so the kid says, good, thank God I can sleep.
That's right.
So that's the pause. Thank God. Now I can let go of something. It's decluttering your spirit. That's what the pause does.
I like that, decluttering your spirit. Is that in the book?
No, but I just made it up.
It's good. Decluttering your spirit is good. That sounds like a new book, Terry.
Yeah, I'll do that one next. I have a new book coming out. It's called This Is Your Life. Come out in September.
Is it coming out in September? Did they decide this year?
Yeah.
That's great.
Yeah.
I'll be sure to read this one.
That's good.
You know, one thing I'd like to close with, and that, you know, you can have, you know, these stories of these temple of these gurus that sit in the top of the temple. Everybody goes to the story to talk to the guru or talk to the Zen artist or the Buddhist artist. And I like the story about, I really like the story about filling up the teacup and your cup can't hold anymore. But there are times, and important times, David Wilcox, a singer that we both really like, has a song that's almost the opposite of this, but is dealing with a very specific situation. And he says, there's a crack in the cup that holds love inside us all. And so for love to continue, love needs that continual pouring, needs that continual. We can't say the marriage, you know.
And I would say to you, that's the key, because pouring is a choice. That's, I choose it. In other words, it's my story. I will give it now. It's the same with when you empty something. I will let go of this. I will give this. I will spill this. I will make this happen. I will offer you this.
This is really a worthy conversation, because this is good.
Because you are empowered.
Right. Rather than listening to a story and saying, okay, I'm going to go by this story exactly.
Yeah, it's not just because the love simply spills out. It's because you have enabled it to spill out. Good for you. Go for it. Keep doing it. Don't quit spilling it.
Oh, that's a great idea. I was thinking of spilling as losing it, and you're thinking of spilling it as giving it.
Yeah, pouring it. Exactly.
Pouring it. Yes. Yes. Well, Terry, this has been really fascinating. We could talk on this subject. As a matter of fact, I do want to talk on it offline sometime, you know, not necessarily today, but we will talk more, because this is good insight. I think this will help us all with taking control, being comfortable in our own skin, and figuring out did you write a book, Being Comfortable in Your Own Skin?
No, I didn't. I just use it all the time in Sabbath moment.
I know. You need to write a little ebook on it or something, so to help us understand that, because I think it's such a powerful concept, and it's more inclusive than we do in our podcasts. And perhaps
that's the one thing about fear, is the assumption that because of the fear you can't be at home in your own skin, that you have to be a victim or prisoner of the fear. See, that's the deal. You don't have to be a prisoner of the fear.
Oh, Terry, that's great. You've never expressed it that way.
The fear is very, 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 very real. There's no doubt. I mean, or the danger or whatever, or the anxiety. It's real. We're not doubting any of that, but you're not the prisoner.
And so we make a choice.
Yeah.
I like that. Okay, so our choice against to ease our tensions of fear and anxiety is to make a choice, to make a space in our life for the things that fill us and do us good, to add some sort of ritual, some sort of regular taking of something that is good for us, that is doing, like when I was meditating, that was good for me. I have ceased to meditate for about 6 months, but I think it's time to get back into that.
And, for example, yes, that's right.
Yeah. Well, Terry, thank you so much. I'm really tickled you spent the time with me today. And I want to encourage everybody to check out your inspirational post, Sabbath Moment, that's at terryhershey.com. And it is really, really worthy. And I also want to thank our listeners for tuning into The Next Chapter with Charlie. And be sure to check us out at our website, thenextchapter.life. And until next, this is Charlie Hedges signing off. Bye for now.